So hopefully everybody can see the beast here, and we'll go through this. That's what the title is, The Beast. So what we've looked at so far is the beast is a reality that has manifested itself throughout the history of the world. We saw it in the Garden of Eden, as indicated by Genesis chapter 1, verse 2. And the mind and attitude of the beast has manifested itself throughout the history of the world, and it's going to continue manifesting itself in a very through it until it's all over, and it's going to manifest itself at the end of the age in a very dramatic way. Interestingly, God chose to inspire a pagan king. We know him as Nebuchadnezzar, and he was able to see a great image, and God, and so he wanted to know what that image symbolized, and none of his soothsayers and magicians and astrologers could give him the answer to his question about this image that he saw. But God inspired the prophet Daniel, and Daniel was able to relay to him what the image was and then explain it to him. And God inspired him to write down what he saw and share it with us, because it wasn't only important in his time, but it's important in our time as well. And so through Daniel, we get more information about the beast. And so God inspired this, so it's good for us to try to gain some understanding of it. So this is a portrayal of the image that Nebuchadnezzar saw. Was it exactly that? We don't know. This is just an artist's portrayal of it. And later on, God revealed to Daniel more about how the beast would manifest itself in history. And Daniel was given the vision of a lion, a bear, a leopard, and the fourth beast, which was unlike any creature known to man. And we see these four images that were manifested to help us to understand that. We have the eagle, which represented Babylon. We had the bear, which represented the Medes and the Persians. The leopard, with its four wings and four heads, and represents Alexander the Great and the Greeks who ruled for a time. And then we have the fourth beast, which represents the Roman Empire, which was a very powerful and influential manifestation of the beast. Now, going back to Daniel chapter 7, let's just take a look at what God revealed to Daniel, and he's written down for all of us. And Daniel spoke, saying, "I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea." So when you look at the manifestation of the beast as it comes into play here, you see this: the winds are stirring up the great sea. And out of that great sea and all of the turmoil there is where the beast comes from. And as we come to the end of the age, and we have a world that is broken down into chaos and into various camps and points of view, then out of that is going to rise the beast and the false prophet. As it says in verse 3, "And four great beasts came up from the sea, each different from the other." And then in verse 7, it says, "After this, I saw the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth. It was devouring, breaking in pieces, and trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns." So the fourth beast is the one we ended on last time, and which was a manifestation, first of all, of the Roman Empire, an empire that has been the standard and the goal that people have had ever since it came to an end. If you go back in history and look at the fall of the Roman Empire, it was a devastating blow to the world. And the world longed for the, I mean, yes, it was a beast that was dreadful, terrible, and exceedingly strong, with iron teeth devouring and breaking in pieces, but it gave organization and stability to the world. And after it fell, then the world in certain parts of Europe and other places fell apart. Now, you had the Eastern Empire carried on until about 1400, but it was not the same empire. They were just kind of a shell of what had gone before. And this is just the sea, the turmoil that you find in the ocean, all the ocean spray and the waves and all of that. And then out of that comes the beast. And this is a picture that probably all of us are familiar with from a past booklet that has been put out about the beast. And I mean, when they first put this out, it was quite impressive because many of us had heard of the beast, but we really didn't have any portrayal of it. So Mr. Armstrong, I think, did us a favor in trying to have an artist portray the beast. And it is a pretty impressive picture. It's like nothing, no animal that you find in the animal kingdom. And as far as the Roman Empire is concerned, it was a vast empire running all the way up here from the British Isles, all the way down through Europe, out through Asia Minor, and down to the where you have Iraq and Iran now, and down into the Holy Land, Egypt, and all across North Africa. All of this area was part of the Roman Empire, and it was a impressive and vast territory had great impact upon the world. And in fact, the world wants the Roman Empire back. Maybe not so much right at the moment, but that is the goal. That is the purpose. And as you look at what's going on in Europe, their model is the Roman Empire. And they to go all the way back in the building that the EU meets in, it is a model of the Tower of Babel. That's what they base it on, which to me is a remarkable thing. Why would you pick the Tower of Babel to have as your symbol in a building in which you meet in? But that's their thinking, and I don't think they really grasp what that all symbolizes. Let's go on to continue in chapter 7 of Daniel, Daniel chapter 7, verse 23. Thus he said, the fourth beast shall be a fourth kingdom on earth, which shall be different from all the other kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth, trample it, and break it in pieces. The ten horns are ten kings who shall arise from this kingdom, and another shall rise after them, and he shall be different from the first ones, and shall subdue three kings. So you have the manifestation of the beast, the fourth beast, which was the Roman Empire. But that, as you know, if you look at your chart, yes, it came and it fell, and then it continued on. And the fact that there are these ten horns who shall arise from this kingdom is talking about ten kingdoms that are going to arise. And they're going to each have their heyday, which history tells us took place as the Holy Roman Empire was established, and they continue to the impact of the world from the time of Justinian all the way down to more modern times. I mean, you have famous rulers like Charlemagne. Time when the Germans were dominant, then you had the Habsburgs become dominant, and then Napoleon comes on the scene, and the French have their chance to be in the limelight. And then that came to an end, and that all stopped for a while, and then out of nowhere comes Mussolini and Adolf Hitler and all of the tragedy and horror that came from everything that they brought about. So when you really get down to it and you look at the manifestations of the kingdom, it's they have ruled. They've ruled with an iron fist. They've waged war. And if you look at the death and destruction that has took place throughout history, it's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing how much devastation, death, and dying has taken place. So let's go to look at another aspect of all this. And this is the little horn that is also mentioned in Daniel chapter 7. Daniel chapter 7, verse 8 mentions this little horn. And this was one picture that I was able to find. And you can see it on this dragon, which, you know, is a symbol of Satan and symbol of this empire that came about. And this little horn that rose up in the midst of all these other horns and was very powerful and influential. And it says in Daniel chapter 7, verse 8, I was considering the horns, and there was another horn, a little one, coming up among them, before whom three of the first horns were plucked out by the roots. And there in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking pompous things. So, I mean, this is a remarkable portrayal, and I think very well gets the idea across of what is being conveyed in the book of Daniel. And then you go down to Daniel chapter 7, verse 25, and it says, he shall speak pompous words against the Most High. You know, the God of heaven and earth, you are so filled with yourself, and you have so much pride and arrogance that you are willing to speak against Almighty God. Sadly, that's where man goes. We're going to talk a little bit more about that next week. And we're going to, because as you look at that, the world is very much a prideful, arrogant place. And on Sabbath, we're going to talk about boasting, actually, and answer the question, should Christians boast? So anyway, but this individual that was represented by this symbol had no qualms about boasting and being arrogant and prideful. And it says that this individual that's speaking these pompous words against the Most High shall persecute the saints of the Most High and shall intend to change times and law. And this individual did. And we having looked into this historically speaking, know that this individual and the people associated with him changed times and law. And, you know, they've done away with the Sabbath, the holy days, and various teachings that are very biblical, but were not endorsed or accepted by those who were the religious powers of the time. It says, then the saints shall be given into his hand for time and times and half a time. And that happened. The church was, as the church became powerful, the church asked the political power to stamp out those who were not in harmony with their views religiously. And so the church came under attack. And the church had to go into the wilderness. And it did so for 1,260 years. It had to hide out. They couldn't just meet openly because they were subject to attack. And regular attempts were made to stamp out the true church. But we know that has never happened and never will happen, because God said the gates of hell would not prevail against it. And as we look at this little horn and the manifestations of all of these things, we have this little horn becoming powerful and influential. And in fact, the Jews had to deal with this. And later on, with the coming of Christ and his death and resurrection and the church being established, then the church had to continue on and came under attack, and they did not live in peace. And we've been able to live in peace my whole life in the church, but how long will that continue? I can't say, and none of us can say. But as I look at the world, there is a higher percentage chance of it all coming to an end and life becoming tough for Christians once again. So, question: historically, have God's people lived and interacted with the beast? Sometimes we can think, well, what the beast? What is that? When have I interacted with that? Where have I interacted with it? And if you go back historically speaking, you find that God's people have come into regular contact with the beast. They've had to deal with it. They've had to continue their lives with that. They've lived and interacted with the beast. I mean, we see that happening in Babylon, and with Daniel. You had Nebuchadnezzar, and Nebuchadnezzar was basically, when we meet him, was a tyrant. He was a tyrant, and yes, he did use some of the conquered people, like the Jews, in various jobs to serve his empire. But if you didn't go along with him, if you did not conduct yourself in a way that he was pleased with or do what he wanted, and he was more than willing to either execute you, as we saw with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. We saw that he sought to burn them up. If you don't bow down, then you will die, and we'll heat up the furnace and kill you. But obviously, that wasn't God's plan, and those men lived through that experience. And Nebuchadnezzar, this pagan king, saw this additional individual in the fire with these Daniel's friends. So as you look at the people of God, they lived in dealing with the manifestations of the beast. For instance, you had Babylon, and Daniel lived through that time, and you also had Daniel live through part of the Persian period. And then out in that same period, you had Esther, you had Nehemiah, you had Ezra, and you had other prophets. The minor prophets, a number of them lived during that time period. As you go forward in time, you have another manifestation of the beast, Alexander the Great. He conquered the world. And he came up to the city of Jerusalem, probably with every intention of conquering it. But when he came up there, the high priest went out to talk to him. And so he went out and talked to Alexander the Great. And we don't know exactly what he said to him, but it seems likely that he had some understanding of what Daniel had to say. And Daniel had indicated that somebody like Alexander would rise up and conquer, and here he is, live and in person. So the high priest talked to him, and I'm sure relayed some of what Daniel had to say, because he packed up and moved on. I mean, probably his intention was to conquer the city of Jerusalem, but once the high priest talked to him, he withdrew. But there was no good reason for it other than possibly what the high priest revealed to him. Then the Jews were, as Alexander's empire came to a close, then you had the rise of the empire's control by two of Alexander's generals. The empire was divided in the east with the general Seleucid. And then in the west, Egypt with the Ptolemies, and so they were in power, and you had a vying and contending with the Seleucids and the Ptolemies for control of the Holy Land. They just happened to be in the middle, and there was a lot of conflict going on between these two kingdoms, and made life difficult for the people living in Judea. And then as time goes on, you have Christ being born. By that time, the fourth beast was in power, and they were in control of Judea and Jerusalem. We know that it's because of the decree that was given by the Roman emperor. They would take a census of the people, and the people had to return to their hometowns, and which was for Joseph and Mary, the town of Bethlehem. So they returned there in order to register for this census that was taking place. So from the beginning of Christ's life, he had to deal with the Roman Empire. And Christ, as we well know, died at the hands of the Jews, who betrayed him and sold him out and sought to condemn him because they saw him as a threat. You had him die at the hands of the Romans. They actually carried out the execution, but the Romans were the ones that were in charge. And from Christ's time forward, God's people have had to deal with the fourth kingdom and its various manifestations. All of the ones down through history, on through all the various times when it passed from Justinian to Charlemagne to Otto the Great to the Habsburgs and then Napoleon and on down to Mussolini and Hitler. All of these were manifestations of the beast. And this is going to continue until it all wraps up at the end of the age. So we know that the end is, you know, is coming. How near are we? We don't know, but it is coming. And as you look at what's going on with politics today and with all of the interactions between various nations, the world could change very quickly and not for the better. So we as Christians need to be prepared by staying close to God and focusing upon his truth. So God relayed through Daniel and other prophets things about what would play out historically and prophetically. And as Christ ascended to heaven, he sent out his apostles to preach the gospel. And he also used the prophet and gospel writer John to record important details that he wanted to pass along to his people. So John was inspired, as we know, to write the book of John, which has a lot of details that are important to us. And also God inspired John to write his three books, three letters, and also the book of Revelation. And in the book of Revelation, we get a lot of information about the beast that helps us to get an updated view. And what you find in Revelation is related to what Daniel wrote. And you really can't understand what John wrote if you don't understand what took place in the book of Daniel. So as you look at the book of Daniel and see what he says there, and you look at what the apostle John had to say, he wrote down details that help us to fully understand. When you correlate Daniel and John, then you can see a more detailed view of what was revealed and what is important for us to understand. So let's read Revelation 13. Revelation 13. And there it says, "Then I stood on the sand of the sea." And as you look at the beast and its manifestation, if you go back to Daniel, this is the same scenario. It's associated with these beasts coming out of this raging sea. It says, "And I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and on his horns ten crowns, and on his heads a blasphemous name." So this is this relates to the book of Daniel. So we can look at what it says here, and we can bring in the book of Daniel and then correlate the two and see how they reinforce and enhance each other. Verse 2. "Now the beast which I saw was like a leopard. His feet were like the feet of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power. So as you look at this beast that is described, it is not individual beast, but it's one beast, but it was like a leopard. It had feet like a bear, and it also had a mouth like a lion. So it had all of these qualities that you find in the past with empires that have already come and gone. But these elements are still a part of this creature there, and as it manifests itself and is going to manifest itself in our time, then we will be able to see it has certain qualities like the leopard. It has feet like the bear. It's big and strong and ponderous, and it has the bite power of the lion. And who's behind it all? It's the same being that's been behind the manifestations of the beast throughout history. The dragon gave him his power, his throne, and great authority. And that's not just true with what's taking place in Revelation, but it's been true whenever the beast has manifested itself. In verse 3, it says, "And I saw one of the heads as if it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly wound was healed." And we know that that took place historically in the time of Justinian. The empire was seemingly done, dead and gone, but Justinian was able to lead it back from the dead, and the empire continued on in the east for another quite a bit of time, for another 1,000 years. "And all the world marveled and followed the beast. So they worshiped the dragon who gave authority to the beast, and they worshiped the beast, saying, 'Who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him?'" And that's been true. Whenever these different manifestations have come about, then the individuals who are involved as central characters in each of the resurrections was a powerful military leader and very influential in the world. The beast is the original war maker and influencing these kingdoms to war and fight and conquer. And like it says, who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him? And sadly, that's going to be truer than ever as we come to the end of the age. Verse 5, "And he was given a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and he was given authority for 42 months. And this, as you look at, go back to Daniel, it talks about, he's given a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies. That is described in Daniel. So it continues to be a indicator of the beast and what really lies at the heart of that movement. And he was given authority for 42 months. As you look at the 1,260 years that they were in power and controlled the civilized world, I guess you might say, the area of the empire, they existed during that particular time, and the church had to basically lie low and not be right out in the open as we have been in my lifetime. And for about most of the 20th century, we've been free to practice the true religion, been able to share the gospel to a large extent. But that time's coming to a close. And when it talks about 42 months, as we get to the end of the age, it's going to be a specific period of 3.5 years that will unfold. Verse 6 says, "Then he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven." So this is this individual that's going to rise has no respect for God. To blaspheme the name of God, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven, he has no respect for God or anything about him. "It was granted to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them." And so as we get to the end of the age, then the this beast power is going to make war with the saints in a way that is seeking to exterminate them and force them to bend to his will. And there will be human beings who will be exercising this, but they're all under Satan's influence. They've all bought into the satanic being whose desire is to thwart the plan of God and to destroy the people of God. He does not want God's plan of salvation to work out, and he's going to do his best to thwart it. And authority was given him over every tribe, tongue, and nations. So he's going to be a very powerful being with extensive influence and extensive powers. And all who dwell on the earth will worship him, whose names have not been written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. So he's been given authority over all the people, tongues and nations, and all who dwell on the earth will worship him. But they're not going to be worshiping the true God. They're going to be worshiping Satan and this individual and look to him as a God. And he's going to be anything but a God. And as you look at the world has gone to worshiping human beings more than should be, but that's just the way it has been with human beings, unfortunately. So here's a portrayal of the beast, and as you look at it, you see that it's similar to the one that was portraying what Daniel saw, but it has incorporated into it the leopard and the lion and the bear. It's all a part of it. And so it's a mixture of all of these empires that have gone before. And then you also have another beast that is pictured in the book of Revelation, chapter 13. Revelation chapter 13, and you look at verse 11. It's talking about this beast that looks like a lamb, but speaks like a dragon. I thought this was a interesting portrayal because you've got the forked tongue coming out of its mouth there, which is not normal to a lamb. Revelation chapter 13, verse 11. It says, "Then I saw another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb and spoke like a dragon." We know that Christ is the Lamb of God, and Christ is a being who is authentic and true and is not in any way a sheep in wolf's, a wolf in sheep's clothing. No, he is the real thing. And so this manifestation is going to be lamb-like, seeking to look like Christ, but in fact, it speaks like a dragon. It says, "And he exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence and causes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. He performs great signs so that he even makes fire come down from heaven on earth in the sight of men." So when the great false prophet comes to the earth, he is going to be very influential. He's going to point people to worshiping the beast. He's not going to point people to God, but he's going to basically seek to exalt himself and to exalt the individual he serves, and he's going to be leading people astray. Why are these supposed miracles taking place? They're taking place to influence people to follow him and where they're leading humanity. And where they're leading humanity is toward the destruction of all mankind. That's where they're leading mankind. Mankind doesn't realize it, but they're powerfully influential. And as you look at, somebody told me many years ago, probably 25 years ago, that Europe is not religious at all. But Europe, the people of Europe are very superstitious. So they're not religious, but they are very superstitious. And so as you have somebody come along that can do these miracles and make fire come down from heaven, then people will be powerfully influenced by all that and taken in by it and do the bidding of the beast as this religious individual is selling his goods to them. Verse 14, it just says, "And he deceives those who dwell on the earth by those signs which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image of the beast who was wounded by the sword and lived. He was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast." Now, do I exactly know what all of this means? I don't. I don't think any of us does. How will it eventually manifest itself? We don't know. At the end of and it says he was granted power to give strength, breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. He causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and enslaved, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their foreheads, and that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. So here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man. His number is 666. And if you look at your chart, it gives you a brief understanding of those numbers and how they tie in with the beast as it makes its final manifestation. So then let's go to chapter 17. Again, we're talking about the beast and talking about another aspect of it. Revelation chapter 17, verse 1. "Then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and talked with me, saying to me, 'Come, I will show you the judgment of the great harlot who sits on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth were made drunk with the wine of her fornication.'" So all of that wine that's pictured here is about making people drunk. And causing people to not honor and worship the God in spirit and in truth, and is deceiving them and leading them away. And this church that it represents, this great harlot, is a great false church. And that great false church has been very powerful and influential throughout the ages. It has it ceased to be influential at a certain time, which the chart goes through and reveals that it's going to, it basically ceased to be powerful in the time of Napoleon, and then it's going to come back again. It says in verse 3, "So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast, which was full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, having in her hand a golden cup full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. And on her forehead, a name was written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and of the abominations of the earth. And I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And I saw her, I marveled with great amazement." And that lies ahead. What is pictured here lies ahead as it comes to pass. So it's going to be a hard time to be a part of the Church of God. We need to count our blessings that we're able to meet in peace, that we have such a beautiful hall to meet in, that we're able to meet there and enjoy the opportunity to honor and worship God and to practice the true religion. because there will come a time when that will no longer be the case. I don't wish for that, but this is just what the Bible tells us. And this is a manifestation of the picture of this beast with the various heads and the harlot riding on the beast and having its influence on the world. And this is a portrayal that dates all the way back to the Worldwide Church of God days when we were putting together the booklets. And this is from a UCG booklet. And the reality going forward is that the beast has manifested itself throughout history. And it is prophesied to come about in one final manifestation. It's coming. The Bible warns us it's coming. And the question is, how do we keep the faith to the end? How do we keep the faith when, if we live at the point where this all manifests itself? We know that we've been able to look at things historically and figure out how things have unfolded. And the question is, when will Europe, the beast, and the religious power, the false prophet, revive for the last time? That's not been revealed. We don't know. We don't know, but it is coming. That's not been revealed, and the Bible reveals how we can survive, though. It tells us exactly what we need to do in order to survive what's coming. And just because it hasn't happened yet, and all this time has passed and not come to pass, it's coming. It is going to play itself out, and it's going to be a very difficult time for the world and a very difficult time for the people of God. So next week, the plan is to meet one final time and discuss this subject in an indirect way. And the question that we're going to answer is, is surviving the final manifestation of the beast? How do we do that? And so in doing some biblical studies, especially in the book of Colossians, it gives us some indications of how we can survive the false prophets that are prophesied to come. So if you're able to join us, I will look forward to having you, and hopefully we can cover that subject, and then we'll move on to some other things that hopefully you'll find interesting. So thanks, everybody, for your attention. Hopefully you found it profitable.